Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on our aspartame update when we come back. You know, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small. But you shall have a perfect and a just weight, and a perfect and a just measure shall you have." Well, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention back in 1787 followed that scriptural principle of law when they put into our Constitution at Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts." Well, back in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, President Johnson took silver coin out of circulation. Now, in place of just weights and balances, these two presidents have introduced into our current practice of the first, second, and fifth planks to the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system. And they've given us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coins. Now, in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today, we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our country? Moses and our founding fathers are Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson. Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons in our Mosaic Law School. It's conducted twice a year here at the law school. And if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study, and if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the archives, our archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Hey, we've been talking about aspartame. Last time we took a look at the history of sugar, the history of sugar cane and its production. Took a little brief look here at this concept of the controversy between aspartame, which is being promoted by the Food and Drug Administration and the U.S. government. In fact, it's promoted by around 90 countries, or it's been approved by 90 countries around the world. So you know it's safe, you know it's effective, you know it's good for you. I mean, if you can't trust your government, who can you trust? Now, I'm getting kind of suspicious about my government over here for more than one reason. And I think when we get through here looking at aspartame, we're going to start asking some more questions about, is the Food and Drug Administration, is our government really looking out for the best interests of the people, or are they looking out for the best interests of Monsanto and the multinational food conglomerates? Now, there have been many, many studies done concerning aspartame, and it creates a circumstance that we call he said, she said. He said, she said. And this keeps all of us confused, because when Monsanto does a study, we say, well, you know, that's a big company, and they got real smart scientists. And we presume that these real smart scientists, when they do their work, if they're white lab coats and then their neckties on, these are honest men, and that these people are always telling the truth. The scientist is kind of like Superman. You know, he's godlike. He doesn't lie. Now, the truth of the matter is, and we're going to give science and scientists the benefit of the doubt, I would presume that most scientists are probably honest, nice guys, and they're doing their jobs, and they give straight answers, and they're giving us the straight skinny. But you know, like any business, like any profession, you know, like politics, for instance, or legal services and lawyers, you know, we have paid whores that work in these professions. There's paid whores in politics, and there's paid whores called lawyers, and then there's paid whores called scientists. And when these people are bought and paid for by the multinational corporation, then they have to spout the line of the corporation. That's where they're getting paid. Now, as lay people, you and I don't know who's telling us the truth and who isn't. Now, do you remember when you were a kid and you were going to school? I remember in the ninth grade, where a science teacher's name was Mr. Turner. And he was a great scientist, Mr. Turner, in the ninth grade in high school. You know, nothing spectacular, but he was a young man. He was just fresh out of college, and he was on his first teaching job, I think. And so one day we came into the classroom, and there was a beaker up on the teacher's desk. And then it had this kind of, I'd say, mustard-colored something in it. It looked like gas, a pretty good-sized beaker. And he started off the class. He said, "I'd like to have a volunteer to come up here and take a big whiff out of this beaker. And then I'm going to leave the room. And when I come back into the room, I'm going to see if I can identify the person who took the big whiff or the big sniff out of this beaker." And then he was asking for volunteers. Now, we all knew when Mr. Turner did this that there was some kind of skullduggery afoot, that when he posited a question like that, we knew there was some kind of trick involved. And so nobody raised his hand. Like, we're all sitting there waiting, going, where's the punchline here? Now, when nobody volunteered, he said, "Well, okay, I suppose you want to know how I'm going to tell who it is that took a sniff out of here." And he said, "Well, what this is in this beaker is chlorine gas. And the person who takes a sniff out of this beaker over here is going to die. And when I come into the room, I'm just going to pick out the dead body." And we all laughed and we said, "Wow, here's our science teacher, you know, here in public school, making this deadly gas in the classroom." And I don't know if anybody would dare do something like that today, but, you know, Mr. Turner, he used to do all kinds of neat things like that. Well, on this question, how diet soda becomes poison, and was taken up by an 11-year-old girl, and I thought that was pretty interesting. It's just a short story. Let me tell you the story here. In 1997, an 11-year-old girl, Jennifer Cohen, saved her babysitting money for lab tests to measure how aspartame breaks down in cans before ingestion by consumers. Now, armed with $1,250 of her own money, this young girl was able to produce peer-reviewable results that Searle, Monsanto, and the Food and Drug Administration, with their multi-million-dollar budgets and their state-of-the-art testing facilities and scientists, could not duplicate. Did you get that? I'm going to read that to you again. I thought that'd blow your socks off. This young girl, 11 years old, with $1,250, was able to produce peer-reviewable results. Listen, boys and girls, do you know what peer-reviewable results means? That's pure science. What that means is, I'm going to test this, and I'm going to write down for you so that you can duplicate my test and see if it comes out the same for you as it did for me. And if you can do it in California and another guy can do the same thing and come up with the same results in New York and another guy can do it in Florida and we can just keep repeating this over here, that's what the scientific model is all about. And here's the crazy part. You'd think that Searle, Monsanto, and the Food and Drug Administration, with all their multi-million-dollar budgets and their laboratories and all their scientists and their white coats, would be able to do this. They haven't yet. And boys and girls, it's not because they can't, it's because they won't. And why won't they? Well, because they make millions and billions of dollars. They make just the soda pop industry alone is a $54 billion a year industry. And one-third of it's predicated upon aspartame. A third of it. How much is it? Let's just take a third of 54 times 0.33, that's 17.82. It's about $18 billion a year, just in one industry, just soda pop. They make $17.82 billion a year. And how much money does this little girl make? Well, she saved up $1,250 so she could have a testing laboratory test her results. So what did she do? All right, listen to this. On January 21st, 1997, Jennifer Cohen bought a case of Diet Coke, and she put 7 cans in the refrigerator at 36 degrees Fahrenheit. She put 7 cans in her bedroom at 69 degrees Fahrenheit, and she put 7 cans in an incubator set at 104 degrees. She checked the temperatures daily for 10 weeks. The remaining cans she took to Winston Laboratories in New Jersey. These were the sample cans. They were found to contain 0.06% aspartame. Now, prior to conducting her experiments, she discovered that aspartame was being consumed by over 100 million Americans and that aspartame has a shelf life of 262 days at 77 degrees Fahrenheit. Her research also revealed that the Food and Drug Administration gets more complaints about aspartame than any other substance, and that aspartame has been linked to brain tumors, seizures, and symptoms mimicking multiple sclerosis and Alzheimer's disease. On April 1, 1997, Cohen took the refrigerated room temperature and incubated cans of pop to the Winston Labs for analysis. The refrigerated cans showed aspartame diminished to 0.0058% with 0.001% DKP and 53.5 parts per billion of formaldehyde. The room temperature samples showed 0.0051% aspartame, 0.002% DKP, and 231 parts per billion formaldehyde. The incubated sample showed 0.026% aspartame, 0.010% DKP, and 76.2 parts per billion formaldehyde. The higher the temperature, the more DKP. Room temperature produced the highest levels of formaldehyde. Cohen also conducted a double-blind test, a taste test, and found that fresh Diet Coke was preferred, and the incubated sample scored the lowest. Now, the Food and Drug Administration says, we believe, based upon all of the information that we've received to date, that this is a safe product. And Cohen wrote in her report, I say decide for yourself, she concluded. Now, Cohen's entire 1997 study can be found at www.doorway.com. That's www.doorway.com. Now, I thought that that just about told the tale. Now, you know, any of these multinational corporations could do tests that are more sophisticated than that. Now, other people have done that. This little girl, Cohen, with her $1,250 over here, just did what anybody could do, and you can do, and you can test it for yourself and find out. You're not going to, and I'm not going to, because if you're like me, you're just too damn lazy. I'd rather just read about somebody else's work and then pick sides. But there's a little bit more to it than that, a little bit more to it. There's a section here that I'm reading in the Artificially Sweetened Times, published in the summer of 2006. I don't know if this thing is still in publication or not. Somebody sent it to me. Listeners do that, you know. And when people send me things, I put them over here on a pile. I've got a pile here over in the corner opposite my desk. And I stack it up and stack it up, meaning to get to it someday. And sometimes that stuff sits there. Well, this is 2006. I don't know when I got it in. And I'm going to presume it was back in 2006 or 7, something like that. And I put it on my pile. And then as I was going through my pile, I came to it. And I said, well, gee, look at this. We haven't talked about aspartame for a while. And you read this. And I read this story here. And I said, gee, there's 24 pages here. And it's got a lot of good material, a lot of good information in it. So there's a section in here called Aspartame Point Counterpoint. The National Diabetic Association and the International Food Information Council, known as the IFIC, maintained that the government-approved artificial sweetener aspartame is perfectly safe for use in foods, beverages, and medicines. Now, below are answers to frequently asked questions regarding aspartame safety. And the questions were first answered in italics, as posed by the IFIC, and then refuted in normal typeface with analysis supported by published scientific and medical literature. The original 1995 IFIC article, Everything You Need to Know About Aspartame, as rebutted by Mark Gold, complete with fully cited references to published scientific reports, is available in its entirety at www.doorway.com. That's www.doorway.com. Now, here's a point that came out in the article, and it says, of all of the government and multinational corporation or producer-produced scientific analysis, they are all in agreement that aspartame is perfectly safe. There isn't a single report that has a negative statement to make about aspartame produced by the FDA, Searle, Monsanto, or any of the manufacturers or producers of aspartame or artificial sweeteners. And I think that that tells a bunch. Every single one of them in lockstep says that stuff is good for you. Now, on the other side, all of the studies that have ever been done by anybody in any laboratory anywhere that have taken a look at aspartame and tested it like this little girl in her home experiment, they also have a 100%. They all agree that this stuff is toxic, that it affects human beings in 92 different ways, has 92 symptoms, or they don't all come up with 92. Most of them just come up with 5, 6, or 8. And then when you add up the results that come in from all of these testing laboratories, of which there have been several hundred of them done over the years, every single one of them come to the conclusion this aspartame isn't fit for human consumption and should be suspect for animals. So as a layperson just sitting here on the sidelines, having never done any scientific tests and wouldn't know how to start if I wanted to, I have to come to the conclusion, well, who am I going to believe? Who's got the most credibility here? So in this article called Point Counterpoint, let's take a look at some of the most asked questions, and then let's see if we can analyze these and come to a conclusion for ourselves. Let's start off with this one here. Is aspartame safe for people with epilepsy? Yes, the Epilepsy Institute, an organization devoted to people suffering from seizure-related problems, has concluded that aspartame is not related to seizures among epileptic patients. Now, that's the industry speaking. That is the International Food Information Council, the National Diabetic Association, and the Epilepsy Institute. Yes, aspartame is perfectly safe. All right. Well, now, there's another side to the story, and that is this. Listen up. The Epilepsy Institute is not the Epilepsy Foundation, but rather the Epilepsy Institute is a Monsanto-funded epilepsy center in New York City. This entity called the Epilepsy Institute has never submitted properly conducted tests on aspartame and seizures for peer review. Independent research by Camfield in 1992, Elsis in 1988, Walton in 1986, and Walton again in 1988 offered such peer-reviewable results and has shown conclusively that seizures are one of the most common adverse reactions linked to aspartame usage. All right, so let's pause here and think about this. The Monsanto Corporation goes out here to the Secretary of State in New York and says, give us a charter for a corporation, and we're going to call that the Epilepsy Institute. All right, so it's owned and operated by Monsanto. Monsanto is the biggest producer of aspartame in the world. Then they hire scientists to work at the Epilepsy Institute, and the scientists there all write up a report and say, epilepsy is not caused by aspartame. Monsanto says, look, we've got this scientific review by the Epileptic Institute, and it says epilepsy is not caused by aspartame. What in the hell are we dealing with here? This isn't science, this is propaganda. Hell, we should be reading Pravda or Izvestia for crying out loud. Boys and girls, that's not science. Let's look at another one. How was aspartame tested before it was approved for use in foods? All right. Here's the official propaganda. It says aspartame is one of the most thoroughly studied ingredients in the food supply. It was tested in more than 100 scientific studies prior to its approval by the FDA in 1981. These tests were conducted in animals and humans, including normal adults and children, lactating women and persons with diabetes, obesity, and special genetic conditions. Aspartame was tested in amounts many times higher than individuals could consume in their regular diet. Today, scientists continue to conduct new studies on this sweetener, as they do many other ingredients used in the food supply. The FDA also monitors and evaluates all research on this and other food ingredients. Now, there is the official propaganda put out by the FDA, Monsanto, and the IFIC, the National Diabetic Association, and a whole host and plethora of other official organs. Now, the other side of the story is, if the studies to which the IFIC refer exist, they are not part of any public record. The IFIC has not provided copies of, or even citations out of, those more than 100 scientific studies for peer review. Now, wait a minute, hang on a second. Now, here's a prestigious national organization called the International Food Information Council. I don't know who organized the International Food Information Council, but I would assume that it is put together and funded by and supported by the corporations that make food, you know, corporations like Monsanto and Kraft Foods and all the Posts and Kellogg's and the rest of them. Now, they say when they put out their publication, there have been more than 100 scientific studies. And yet, when you say to the IFIC, okay, cite these studies, total silence. Not one study has ever been made public, and worse, not even a citation from a study that wasn't made public. What in the hell kind of science is that? Huh? Tuck that one away in your heart. It's better as we progress along. Can persons with diabetes consume aspartame? Yes! The American Diabetes Association has stated that aspartame is acceptable as a sugar substitute and can be included in a diabetic meal plan. That comes from the American Diabetes Association. My God, how much better recommendation can you get than that? All right, now, here's what the other side of the coin is. H.D. Roberts, M.D., has been studying the effects of aspartame on diabetics for 20 years. And he has noticed significant metabolic, neurologic, vision, and other problems in diabetics that remedy themselves when aspartame is removed from the diabetic diet. Dr. Roberts' observations can be found in his meticulously referenced book. It's called Aspartame Disease, An Ignored Epidemic. See page 23. Now, it was reported in 1995 that the American Diabetes Association receives generous annual contributions from Monsanto. Now, hey, wait a minute here, kids. Wake up here. Smell the coffee? Can you smell this? The American Diabetes Association has turned itself into a whore by accepting donations and contributions from Monsanto. We want your approval. And we're going to give you $1 million or $2 million here for your approval. And if you give it to us, we'll keep making these annual contributions to you. Now, here in the United States, we have millions of diabetics. If these diabetics knew that this aspartame was causing symptoms and causing them problems, they probably would not eat foods. They would probably be careful about reading the labels and avoiding them. Now, if you're a diabetic, you probably would associate with other diabetics, and other diabetics or want to have an association, and you want to know what the latest cure, what the latest treatments, and what the latest information is on diabetes. And of course, there's an association called the American Diabetes Association, just like there's an AARP out there. So when these big multinational corporations want millions of people who are members of these organizations that have millions of members, like the AARP, if you want to sell insurance or you want to sell something, you go to the AARP and you say, hey, listen, we'll give you $1 million if you'll give us an endorsement, and you'll say in your AARP magazine that this insurance policy is great and or this product is good. And people rely upon these trade publications. When you're a doctor and you belong to the American Medical Association and you get a copy of the Journal of the American Medical Association, the JAMA, articles and treatises, and you read those, you believe them. When you're a plumber or a carpenter or a lawyer and you subscribe to a trade publication, you believe what the trade publication is telling you because you believe that the Diabetes Association is giving you the straight skinny, that they haven't sold out. They haven't sold out. Well, now, when a politician takes campaign contributions, let's say, from the American Petroleum Institute, well, then, would you be surprised if that politician voted on legislation that favored petroleum companies? I mean, hell, you know, you're getting paid a fair and square bribe. You might, you know, you're kind of expected, you know, that for the bribe tendered that you deliver a quid pro quo, aren't you? Well, what this tells us here is that the American Diabetes Association is just another agency of whores that are here to deceive their own members by telling them that this product is good. Now, listen, all of you diabetics out there, I don't care whether or not you eat aspartame or drink aspartame. It's no skin off my back one way or the other. But here's an 11-year-old girl today for $1,250. Every one of you diabetics is going to spend more than $1,250 this year on your disease. $1,250 for a diabetic is chicken feed. Why don't you take $1,250 and then do an 11-year-old scientific test on aspartame and get the answer for that for yourself? Huh? Okay, we're at the halfway point. I've got to give you a report here so we can satisfy the governments around the world here that we are on the up and up with you. You are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by pre-arrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there off of our website. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. And we're talking about aspartame, the aspartame update. Now, if you look back in our archives, you'll see that we've talked about aspartame in the past and over the years. And so I picked up an update here to bring you up to date as to what's going on here with aspartame and other artificial sweeteners, a little history behind it and all. And we'll top it off here with the 92 symptoms that are caused by aspartame and what you can do to test yourself to see whether or not your symptoms are actually caused by aspartame. It's pretty simple. It's a scientific, peer-reviewable test that you perform. And here's what you do. You start reading the labels on the products that you buy, and you eliminate aspartame and artificial sweeteners from your diet for 30 days. 30-day test. And you don't have to give up cookies. You just give up cookies that are artificially sweetened. And you don't have to give up anything that you're now eating, candy, cookies, and just whatever you want. But don't consume any artificial sweeteners for 30 days. And then note down when you start your test here, what is it that you're suffering from? Have you got the shakes? Have you got Parkinson's disease? Have you got Alzheimer's? What is it that you're suffering from? And I'll give you a list of these 92. And then you take a look in 30 days and you say, well, has any of this improved? And if it has improved, well, then you'll know that aspartame was the culprit. If it doesn't improve, you haven't lost a thing. Just go back to eating more aspartame and live your life and collect your disability. Now, here's another one over here. It says, can aspartame cause visual damage? Can aspartame cause visual damage, eye damage? The answer, according to the officials at the FDA, no. Scientists know that only huge quantities of methanol can affect vision. A small amount of methanol is formed when aspartame is digested or when its components separate. However, the amount of methanol one could possibly consume from aspartame is well within safe levels and is actually less than that found in many fruit and vegetable juices. Now, that's the official response when we ask, can aspartame cause visual damage? Now, notice in the answer here, nobody at the FDA here is denying that there's methanol in this aspartame, but there isn't very much of it. There isn't enough there to cause any damage. They don't tell us how much that you'd have to limit this to, so we don't know whether we should eat 5 milligrams a day or 10 or 50 or 100. They didn't say that, but a little bit of methanol poison is probably good for you. Now, here's what happens out in the real world when we do a scientific test. Then we don't have a monetary return. The relationship between methanol and blindness has been known for decades. The relationship between macular degeneration and aspartame was explained to Congress in 1987 by methanol expert and eye specialist Dr. Morgan B. Rayford. Dr. Rayford testified about one of the many persons that he had seen with eye damage caused from aspartame. And as per his paper, Rayford, 1987, he described how the deterioration of Shannon Roth's eyes due to methanol poisoning attributed to NutraSweet was identical to the damage that I observed repeatedly in the eyes of individuals whose eyes have been damaged by methyl alcohol toxicity. Dr. Rayford's work was supported in 1991, Cook and Bergman et al. Now, let's go back here and let's ask this question again, where it says, can aspartame cause visual damage? And the official answer is no. Scientists know that only huge quantities of methanol can affect vision. Now, they don't tell us what the amount is that can affect your vision. You don't know, and neither do I. I don't know whether it's the amount that I get out of one can of soda pop or 100 cans. We assume that the PepsiCo company and the Food and Drug Administration know the answer to that, and they're looking out for us, huh? And that they're not putting too much in there, right? That's what we're assuming. Now, there are complaints that come in to the FDA. Now, I don't know how many complaints come in. I didn't get that number. But the FDA is a big bureaucracy, and they have thousands of employees. And they have branch offices all over the country. And they have a big budget. And they're very famous people. It's a very famous agency in the U.S. government. It's called the Food and Drug Administration. Got lots of nice people working there. And those people there at the FDA receive complaints from people all over the country about every food and drug that is manufactured in this country. If you have a problem with a drug, or with some food, the agency that you complain to is the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration. Now, I don't know how many complaints they receive every year, but I would imagine it's probably several million complaints a year, just, or at least it's several thousand or several hundred thousand or several million, or it's a whole bunch. I don't know how many, but it's a bunch. Now, 75%, that's three complaints out of every four, relate to aspartame or some other artificial sweetener. And 25% relate to everything else that the Food and Drug Administration administers. So take every food that's made in the United States of America, take every drug that's made in this country, and then take all of the complaints that go into the Food and Drug Administration, however many that is, and 75% of them deal with aspartame and 25% deal with everything else that the Food and Drug Administration deals with. Now, what does that tell you? You know, something's wrong here. Something's wrong. Now, they haven't changed their position. They haven't come to the conclusion that just because we're getting three complaints out of every four about aspartame doesn't mean that we're going to investigate it or that we're going to do a simple test that an 11-year-old girl can do to come to a conclusion as to whether or not this stuff is actually hurting people or not, causing these symptoms, 92 symptoms. We're not going to test it. We're not going to do that. And that's because we get paid a lot of money by the manufacturers. You know, we're getting paid off. That's what that boils down to, payoff. Now, again, you know, those of us that have got college degrees and we've been around for 50, 75 years, surely we're as smart as an 11-year-old girl, aren't we? All right, so let me put a bracket around that one so I don't read that one to you again. Listen to this one. Do some people have adverse reactions to aspartame? Oh, my God. Does anybody ever have an adverse reaction to aspartame? Here's the official answer. There is no scientific evidence that aspartame is linked to adverse reactions in people. The U.S. Center for Disease Control, the CDC, reviewed some 500 consumer complaints related to aspartame in 1984. And the CDC concluded that there was no specific group of symptoms clearly related to aspartame consumption. The FDA has investigated all complaints since 1984 and has stated that there is no consistent or unique pattern of symptoms reported with respect to aspartame that can be causally linked to its use. Individuals who have concerns about possible adverse reactions to aspartame should contact their physicians. Go see your doctor. All right, now here's what the other side has to say. Adverse reactions to aspartame comprise about 80% of product complaints to the FDA. And contrary to the IFIC claims and the FDA, independently produced, double-blind studies showing adverse reactions in humans to aspartame have been published by Camfield et al., 1992, Elsis Trotter, 1988, Kohler, Gleros, 1988, Kluklaksaki, 1995, Spires et al., 1988, Vanden Eden et al., 1994, and Walton in 1993. Now, let's see how many of these scientific studies have been published. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 7 scientific studies, peer-reviewable, have been studied at linked. And they didn't just link 4 or 5 complaints. They linked 92 symptoms to aspartame. Now, boys and girls, the FDA could do that if they wanted to, but they don't want to. And they produce nothing but platitudes. Now listen to the official response. Not once do they say, we tested this, and here's where we tested it. And here's the documentation. Not once. Listen to the official response again. Do some people have adverse reactions to aspartame? And the FDA says, there is no scientific evidence that aspartame is linked to adverse reactions in people. What a crock of BS. I just listed 7 for you. 7. And the FDA hasn't even conducted a scientific test. They don't want to. They don't have to, and they're not going to. They rely upon Monsanto and Searle and the companies to do it for them. And those companies, when they conduct the scientific tests, well, how do you think the results come out? Now, listen up. Let me tell you a little story here. Back in the 1940s and early 50s, the John Deere Company came up with a hell of a neat idea. And it was a known fact that dairy cattle, when they're out in pasture, waste about 50% of the available pasture when they're grazing upon it. They defecate and they urinate and they walk on and they lay down on the grass as they're eating it. So when you turn 100 cows into a 20-acre field, and let's just pick a number over here, let's just suppose that there's 5 tons of green feed per acre on this 20-acre pasture. And so you've got 5 times 20, that would be 100 tons of green feed on this pasture, and you've got these 100 cows eating on it. Now, they're going to waste 50% of it. So that's 50 tons. And so some bright young fellow said, well, gee, if we could go in there and harvest that green feed and feed it to the cows in a feedlot, let the cows lay down in their own manure and feces, let the cows all be bunched up over here on a muddy day so that they can live in the mud and the filth, and then let's go out and cut that green feed and bring it in and feed them to them in this feedlot over here, we get twice as much feed. We can feed twice as many cows. So they came up with a machine called a field chopper, and then they came up with a wagon that was self-unloading. And you could take this self-unloading wagon, and then you could unload it into these feed bunks. Well, my employer at the time, a guy named Francis Capini, he bought one of those, and we went out. It was the greatest thing since sliced white bread. God, I loved it. You know, I was about 18 years old. God, I loved just sitting on the tractor and driving up and down the field all day. It was a great job. You know, I sit back and smoke a cigarette, you're chopping feed and blowing it back in the wagon. Then you unhook and you take this tractor and wagon up there and unload and come back and keep doing it. Now, at the end of the year, you got all this manure up here in the feedlot, so you got to load all that up into wagons and haul it down into the field. See, if the cows are in the field, they urinate and they defecate in the field, and so you don't have to haul it. They got it down there. So one day, I was up in the blue room, and we were talking up there, you know, and there was a guy by the name of Elias Souza, an old Portuguese guy. And I was talking about this field chopper and this chopping operation and how profitable it was and how it saved half the feed, and we had twice as many cows eating off the same amount of ground. Now, of course, without the cow's fertilizer going on the ground, you have to put chemical fertilizer on it. So that's another operation and another expense. You got to go out and buy chemical fertilizer, and you got to hire people to come help you haul all this manure out of the feedlot and spread it on the fields, and you got to have a lot of tractors and manure spreaders and gasoline and, you know, repairs at Barnes Tractor and Equipment and so on. All right, and so we're up there talking, and this old Portuguese guy said to me, he said, you know, I'm just too damn lazy. I'm going to put my cows out there and let them do it in the field and haul the milk up to the barn, and I'll take the milk out and put it in a tank and sell it. And I don't want to buy chemical fertilizer, and I don't want to spend all that money cutting that green feed and building all those troughs and feeding all those cows in that feedlot and hauling all that manure out of the feedlot and going to all that work. I'm just too damn lazy to do that. Some years went by. And about 1960, after about 10 years of all this, Francis Capini quit field chopping and went back to natural pasture. Well, I couldn't contain myself, so I asked Francis, I said, well, why are you doing that? I mean, you know, you're saving half and you've got twice as many cows. And he said, well, over the 10 years that I've been doing this, I've been keeping records. And I can tell you how many gallons of milk I sell, and they measure it in pounds, you know, but how many pounds of milk I'm selling, and how many dollars I have to spend on tractors and field choppers and repairs and gasoline and hauling manure and one thing and another. And I can compare that period from 1951 to 1959, and I can compare that with 1940 through 1950, and I find that there is no savings whatsoever. In fact, it cost me 15% more to feed in this feedlot than profit that I made. So I actually lost 15% by doing that. Now, to do this, remember the John Deere dealer came out and sold Francis this field chopper and wagons and tractors and all this and told him about how much money he was going to make, and he did that based upon a study that was done by the University of California at Berkeley. And so, come to find out, the John Deere Company goes to the department in the university, their Department of Agriculture, and says, look, we got this idea, and we want you to test it for us. So the university received $3.4 million on a five-year test between 1945 and 1950. To come up with the dollars and cents, and does this make good economic sense? And the university came back and said, you bet it does. Why you'll double your profits, and why you'll just make all this money. And they had all these studies and all these agricultural scientists over here signing on to this new concept of field chopping, you know, for your dairy herd. Excuse me, boys and girls, but did the University of California, did they have a vested interest in turning out a report that would be favorable to the John Deere Corporation? Well, of course they did. And did they fulfill the John Deere Corporation's expectations for the $3.4 million that they advanced to them? Well, of course they did. And then armed with all of this scientific expertise and these years of testing by the university, did the John Deere Company write up, print up, and make slick-colored, full-color brochures describing to the farmers how they were going to make all this extra money and all this extra profit? Well, of course they did. And did the farmers believe the slick, four-color brochures and all the scientific statements made by the university about all the profit they were going to make? Well, of course they did. Did any of these farmers ever test any of this before they bought? No, not a one of them. And did they all find out when they got through at the end of 10 years that they lost money? Yep, every one of them. Did the John Deere Company quit making field choppers and wagons? Yep, sure they did. So there you are. Now, let's pay attention and learn a lesson over here. When we find that there are vested interests putting money into these organizations and groups, and some of them that they're putting into, like Monsanto, who creates their own testing laboratory, or they create their own, like epilepsy. Is aspartame safe for people with epilepsy? Yes, the Epilepsy Institute. Well, how phony, how transparent can you get? Monsanto creates their own Epilepsy Institute. What do you think the Epilepsy Institute is going to report? They're a bunch of whores hired by Monsanto. They're going to report back what Monsanto wants the whore to say, aren't they? I mean, hell, you don't need to go to college. I don't think you need a degree from a university to figure that out, do you? Because if you do, there's probably no hope for you at all. Now, when we're talking about aspartame, or we're talking about cheese or pizza or anything else, let's be intelligent enough to find out, well, who's making this report? Who is it that's telling us all these things that they want us to believe? Now, if it's an independent group, if it's somebody that doesn't have a vested interest, now I'm here reporting to you, I don't have a vested interest in it. Monsanto's not paying me a dime. Let me assure you that if Monsanto was sending me $1 million a year, my report to you would be totally different than what you're hearing. I'd be telling you about how good aspartame is. Boy, that aspartame really tastes good. You're going to love it, and it's healthful and nutritious, too. I eat it 3 times a day. I put it on my cornflakes every morning. Come on, Monsanto, send me $1 million and see how you can prostitute me. I don't know. I've never had anybody offer me $1 million. I always said this. You never want to send me any more money than you can afford to lose, because I'd probably steal it from you. Well, all right. Let's pay attention. Wake up, and let's smell the coffee here, children. Yeah, I'm about out of time again, so I'm going to give you a reminder that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.